As promised to you earlier this year, I hope to devote two of our reports from the Capitol on this subject and its social and economic possibilities, because it will have far-reaching effects for nearly every man, woman, and child in America. The controversy is now becoming both heated and very emotional. Many false impressions have been created because the debate over this so-called health insurance has, in many instances, left the realm of fact and become purely an emotional issue. I hope to present to you an objective account of this great national and state issue. During this discussion, I hope to tell you the background of this proposal, which began in Germany in the year 1883. In next week's talk, I trust to give you both sides of the argument on compulsory health insurance in as fair a manner as possible, leaving it then up to you to decide what is best for a majority of our people. The so-called compulsory health insurance proposal was first brought up in the United States in the year 1935, when the Social Security Act became law. At the time this bill was being drawn up, the inclusion of health insurance was considered, but rejected. President Roosevelt called a health conference in Washington, D.C. in 1938, and out of this, in 1939, Senator Wagner of New York introduced a bill, but this legislation was never considered by the Congress. A few years later, in 1943, and while the newly announced beverage plan in England for cradle-to-grave security was being discussed, Senators Wagner, Murray of Montana, and Representative Dingell of Michigan introduced a bill which included many of the health features of the English beverage plan. This bill promptly became known as the Wagner-Murray-Dingell Bill. This bill provided for a tax to carry out the program, and thus was referred to the Committee on Ways and Means in the House of Representatives and to the Committee on Finance in the Senate. Neither of these committees gave much consideration to the bill. In 1945, Senators Wagner and Murray introduced another health insurance bill and received an endorsement when President Harry Truman sent a special message in November of that same year to the Congress and asked for legislation on the health of the nation. Another version of the Wagner-Murray-Dingell bill was introduced after the presidential message, and because the new version did not contain provisions for taxation, it was referred to the Committee on Education and Labor, where it was thought that it would receive a more friendly consideration and treatment. This committee held hearings on the bill from April to July of 1946, actually spending 36 full days in taking testimony, and the printed hearings occupy 5 good-sized volumes. Almost all sides of the question of health insurance, compulsory or otherwise, were presented in and at these hearings. Those favoring the measure were representatives of various governmental agencies like the Federal Security Board, the United States Public Health Service, a good many labor groups, and a good many professional organizations. Those primarily opposed to the bill included the American Medical Association, the American Hospital Association, the National Grains, the American Bar Association, and the United States Chamber of Commerce. The committee never issued a report of its findings, and the measure died with the 79th Congress. The Wagner-Murray-Dingell bill was reintroduced in the 80th Congress. More extensive hearings were held, these running into 4 large volumes. These hearings also included testimony on the Taft substitute bill, which provided for a federal consultative service in health matters and for grants in aid to the states for health purposes. Again, no report was issued by the committee, and the measure died with the 80th Congress. That, in brief, is the short history of federally controlled health legislation in our country. Early in the present session of this Congress, the 81st Congress, Senator Murray introduced, on behalf of himself and Senators Wagner of New York, Pepper of Florida, Chavez of New Mexico, Taylor of Idaho, and McGrath of Rhode Island, another health insurance bill. This bill is known as Senate Bill No. 5. It got in early. It is known as the National Health Insurance Act of 1949. It consists of 86 pages and would, with few exceptions, such as railroad employees who already are covered by law, tax everyone in the country 1.5% of his salary or income up to $3,600, but this figure may well and likely will be changed to $4,800 according to sponsors of the bill. In addition, the man or concern for whom you work would pay a similar or matching amount of money. In other words, the tax would be taken out of your paycheck in the same manner as the Social Security tax is now withheld. The money collected would go to pay the nation's health bill. Sponsors of the bill contain that the act specifically provides for patients to have free choice of doctors and for doctors to have free choice of patients. Administration would reportedly be on the local level. This legislation is at present before the Senate Education and Labor Committee. But the inside opinion here in Washington is that the proposed compulsory health plan of Oscar Ewing, Federal Security Agency Director, would also include this Senate bill. The plan, as outlined by Mr. Ewing, a spokesman obviously for the administration on health insurance, would run about 250 pages and probably contain provisions for everything from dental care to new wigs for the bald-headed. Compulsory health insurance began in Germany 66 years ago, although Norway's system actually started 102 years ago, but did not become compulsory until many years later. In 1888, compulsory health insurance was adopted in Austria, followed by Hungary. A similar system, originally voluntary in character, was initiated in Denmark in 1892. From 1900 to 1909, Luxembourg and Norway developed such programs, and from 1909 until the outbreak of the First World War, Great Britain, Russia, Serbia, Romania, Holland, and Switzerland adopted legislation of this nature and character. In the 6 years following the First World War, from 1919 to 1925, Belgium, Chile, Japan, Poland, Portugal, Yugoslavia, and the Soviet Union adopted national health insurance programs. France and Italy followed in 1928. And in the 1930s, Peru, Ecuador, Greece, and New Zealand took similar steps. Since 1940, Costa Rica, Mexico, Panama, Paraguay, Venezuela, Belgium, and Spain have adopted national medical programs of one kind or another. There has been a great deal of publicity concerning the health plan used in Great Britain, or England as you will. The first English law was enacted in 1911 to provide compulsory health insurance for all workers between the ages of 14 and 65, receiving $140 a month or less. It includes a system of local societies whereby the services of doctors were provided but without hospitalization or laboratory facility. Under the new law enacted in England in 1946 and sponsored by the Labour government, a much more thoroughgoing system was instituted to cover the entire British population. The government undertook the regulation and operation of all hospitals and clinics, while medical men, dentists, and nurses were placed under government supervision and in government service. Doctors are paid fees by the English government on the basis of experience, location, and number of patients. Pharmacists are also taken under the government wing. Costs of the plan are met from the public treasury. Norway uses a different type of health insurance. This was started in 1846 and became compulsory in 1913. Two-thirds of all the Norwegians are under the compulsory plan and others under a voluntary plan. Norwegian doctors are paid according to their type of service at so much per insured patient, depending upon the length and type of treatment. Insured persons select their own doctors, while in turn, doctors are at liberty to accept or refuse patients. You also may be interested in knowing how the system works today in Soviet Russia. In the USSR, all doctors, nurses, and dentists are employees of the state at fixed income, salaries, payments of one kind or another. The people go to the doctors and dentists in their own particular areas and receive free treatment. Our discussion this week, outlining state-supervised health plans in other countries and legislative proposals now and previously made in the United States, will, I trust, serve as a reasonable background to our one-man town hall type debate next week at this same time over this same station on the reasons for and against a compulsory health insurance program for the citizens of the United States of America.